Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is on the ones and twos as always, the producer extraordinaire. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We got a jam-packed show for you today, guys. We got our good friend John Marques from the Town Hall going to be joining us here in this first hour talking the change of leadership there at LSU in the athletic directing department. We'll also have live in studio STM head basketball coach Danny Broussard. We'll also have James Yasko on from the Lima Time Time podcast in the second hour talking Stros. And then, of course, we got the two heavy hitters, Les East and Ron Higgins, both in the third hour to dissect Saints and Pels. Also, the LSU situation, plus much, much more. But before we get started talking about sports, y'all just need to make sure to be safe out there today. Reminder, the threat of severe weather is supposed to hit Acadiana today, so y'all be careful out there. A reminder, all state offices are closed today. All the Catholic schools in the Diocese of Lafayette will be closed today. With two exceptions, that's Turlings High right here in Lafayette and then St. Bernard School in Brobridge.
And I figured out as I was – good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
Looking through this little story here. Those two schools are only open this morning to present their passion plays to the student body.
That would make
sense.
And
then they will be dismissed at 10:30 a.m. So they are technically open, but by 10:30 they will be home as well. So – that tells me that by about 10:30 or so today, I maybe myself need to try to have as much of my stuff done as possible.
Wrap that up.
Okay? Yeah.
We've got to wrap that up, brother. Also, as well, all Evangeline Parish public schools will be closed today. However, principals, custodian, supervisory staff, and maintenance personnel are asked to report to campus in the morning. I would assume that they're going to let them go by midday as well. All five locations of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Acadiana will also be closed today to severe weather threat in the area. And, of course, the public schools are closed as well. So please be safe out there. We will keep you posted with any reports of the severe weather that's going to be coming through Acadiana. So, did something happen yesterday? It's a big newsy day yesterday in the world of sports. Things started off with David Griffin having his first press conference, and that was a drop the mic kind of press conference, and we'll get into that later. But the Pels got themselves quite the hire there. He let it be known what his intentions were, and expect this guy to take care of business sooner than later. But the big news coming out yesterday was, of course, after 11 years, the Joe Oliva era at LSU is now over. Behind the scenes, you heard people talking about this, that there was a possibility that he would be resigning or stepping down. He only had one more year left on the deal. And, you know, we know diehard LSU fans have not been a fan of Joe Oliva, okay? it started as far back as the botched firing of Les Miles when he's trying to get Jimbo Fisher to come to Baton Rouge. That didn't work out. He had egg all over his face. He had to let Les come back, and then he decided to fire him, what, 3-4 games into the next season? The hires with the basketball program not working out. He finally gets a home run, appears to get a home run with a hire with Will Wade, but then all that went sideways. And we talked about it on Monday's show. The language and the words used by Joe in his statement about Will Wade being reinstated. And it was very kind of, it came off, we talked about it, it came off like Joe wanted to fire Will Wade, but couldn't. And he was kind of pissed off about that. That's how it came off, how contractually obligated. You know, he used very specific language in his statement about the reinstatement of Will Wade. But Joe got a ton of heat for that whole situation. I remember being there for the regular season finale inside the PMAC against Vanderbilt. He'd been suspended the day before, indefinitely suspended, because he refused to talk to the administration over the Yahoo Sports report about Will being on a wiretapped conversation by the FBI with Christian Dawkins, a now convicted felon. His refusal to do that angered Joe Oliva and company, and they suspended him indefinitely. And I remember the day after, inside the PMAC, Oliva shows his face, and the student section inspired the rest of the PMAC to be just absolutely brutal.
Censored for radio, please.
The things that they were chanting, yes, we cannot even remotely even work ourselves away around to try to tell you how what they said. But this groundswell of support of getting rid of Joe Oliva has been there for a while. Jordy Holtberg talked about it on his show yesterday, how it kind of started when he Joe even flirted with trying to go to Tennessee to take that job years ago. He talked a lot about, you know, you have to be from here. You know, they'll really get behind you. You need someone that's from here that has love for LSU, has love for the state. I don't necessarily agree with that. Nick Saban was able to win here, and he's not from Louisiana. Okay, Les Miles was able to win from here, and he was a beloved coach for a long time, and he wasn't from here. Okay, so I don't necessarily buy into that rationale, but Joe did not Joe didn't do himself any favors with the fan base on how he behaved and how he handled situations and how big situations under his watch were just handled terribly. Over and over again, he had opportunities to do things in a more professional manner and do things in a more discreet manner and do things that represented the university in a far better fashion or reflected on the university and their leadership in a far better light. And Joe just didn't do that. I mean, I keep coming back to the Les Miles situation and just going, how in the hell did he screw that up? It was public knowledge. Remember, Cody? It was public knowledge that that last game, which I want to say was against A&M for Les Miles that season, when they carried him off the field for the win, it was known. Les Miles thought that he was going to be fired, that that was going to be his last day.
Yeah, he wouldn't have let the guys carry him off the field if he didn't think that.
The fans thought that.
Yeah.
Now, you had a couple weeks of the fans expressing themselves with letters to the editor of the newspaper, calling in to talk, sports talk radio, you know, doing everything that they could, social media, Facebook, the whole nine yards, about we need to keep Les Miles. We need to keep Les Miles. This is what we need to do. Look, if Joe wanted to get rid of Les Miles, he should have got rid of Les Miles right then. You don't make decisions based on the whims of the general public. Because sure enough, when they struggled the next year, the same people that are like, you should have bring back Les Miles, we love Les Miles, were like, you need to fire Les Miles. And then they fired Les Miles, and then everyone was up in arms about that. You're not going to win the PR battle with the diehard fans. But you got to do what's right, what you believe is right for the university that you represent. The multi-million dollar industry that you're essentially the CEO of as head of the athletic department at LSU. And Joe didn't do that. Why not let Les just walk, you know, be carried off the field and then find your new coach? And whether that would have been Jimbo Fisher or not, I don't think it was. I think Jimbo used LSU not once but twice to get a pay raise and to get a better job or more money. So he had to deal with having the egg on his face for that. Then he gets rid of Les Miles. He has Ed O as the interim head coach. And then the coaching search after that, and there's more egg over his face. All these reports coming out that all these other coaches are talking to Joe Oliva and discussing things with him and using him to get a better job. Tom Herman at Texas springs to mind. And then how they handled the Will Wade situation. How they, I think what hurt them even more than the Wade situation, Cody, was the fact that they decided to hold out Javonte Smart. Like, that was the thing that I think rubbed people even more, angered them even more than the coach being suspended, was the fact that you're taking out this kid with no evidence that he did anything wrong, no evidence that his family did anything wrong. His last name is just mentioned on a wiretap conversation, and you hold him out for an abundance of caution, where he has to miss the regular season finale there in front of the home fans. And then it's 2 hours before tip for the SEC tournament game that he finds out that he can go. They have to call him, and he has to get out of his hotel room because they were having to leave him at the hotel room because the rest of the team was on the bus. That's what I think rubbed people the wrong way more than anything. It's like, why are you doing that to that kid? And then sure enough, oh, there's nothing wrong. And then we have more than a month of the Will Wade situation. And they're like, okay, you're reinstated. So if you're a diehard LSU fan, it's like, well, what was this all done for? Why? Why did this occur? So the announcement gets made yesterday that the Joe Oliva era, after 11 years, and PR hit after PR hit, which Joe was accustomed to because he was the man that was the athletic director at Duke University for the Duke lacrosse rape scandal, where they suspended the season and fired the coach over allegations of sexual assault that proved to be untrue, proved to be a fabrication, and only was brought to trial and made a lightning rod issue from an overzealous district attorney. Joe was head of that athletic department during that time, which is, I'm still puzzled why LSU hired him after the fact. Like, did they see how he handled that and how he was quick to cave into public pressure and the national spotlight that he, with no cause, fired his head coach and suspended an entire season over allegations that proved to be untrue? What about that for the LSU leadership that hired him 11 years ago screamed, that's a guy we want to have run our athletic department. That's the guy we want to have replace Skip Bertman. Like, I questioned it then. I'm like, you mean the guy that's totally mangled the Duke lacrosse situation is going to be the athletic director for LSU? He's going to replace Skip Bertman? Are you for real? Huh? What happened? But it didn't take LSU very long to find Joe Oliva's replacement. You heard Cody talk about it in the two-minute drill, you know, that Joe was going to stay on in a consultant role, essentially, for the university, you know. And that, here's the other thing. It was reported yesterday that he was going to stay on as athletic director until they replaced someone. Well, that didn't take long. It was like an hour and a half later that the news broke. Oh, by the way, LSU's going to hire Texas A&M athletic director Scott Woodard to replace Joe Oliva. That tells me LSU already had Scott. They're like, we're going to take care of this for you, Scott. No, You just go ahead. You go and start packing up the house. We're going to have a presser about Joe. We're going to have a press release about Joe. And then about 30 minutes later, we're going to let the world know that it's you're going to be the new guy.
I wonder when that's going to take effect. Do we have a report on that? Is it Monday? Is it Friday? Is it already?
Woodard was letting the word out on Wednesday that he was becoming LSU's athletic director.
He was becoming.
Has been in the works for several days.
No, that's fine. That's fair. I mean, I understand that, you know, before you announce it or whatever, reveal it, leak it, however you want to call it.
If it's LSU, today's Thursday.
Monday.
Yeah, well, they're either going to try to sneak in the presser Friday afternoon.
Okay.
Okay, classic news dump.
Right, of course.
Okay. And build that up for the weekend, or they'll let this build up over the weekend and then have the presser on Monday.
Like so we're looking at either a Friday or a Monday, most likely. We don't know that, but most likely.
I didn't think they were going to have the replacement in place right. That quickly either, and that happened. Johnny on the spot, so they could have a presser today is all as I know. They could just send out a release. New athletic director announcement coming today, presser.
And I've got what I think is a pretty good metaphor for what Joe Oliva's new position is at LSU. If it confuses you what he's going to be doing now, I'll let you know after the break. I think I got a metaphor that'll explain it to everybody.
Oh, I'm liking this. I'm liking this already. Joe Oliva out at LSU. We'll talk more about that and his replacement after this break right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Oh, yeah. Good job there, Cody. That's a good job right
there. So that one doesn't go over your head.
No, that's a great job. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parson III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Led off the show with the news of yesterday and still today. Joe Oliva is out at LSU as the athletic director after 11 years. His replacement is already been in the works, apparently.
Being named.
Yes, being named. Texas A&M Athletic Director Scott Woodward. Now, there's been multiple media reports that is happening. There's not been an official release, I do not believe, from the university that...
No, the latest I've seen is still the Thanks Joe
right,
post.
Right. They're going to give some time there thanking Joe for his fundraising efforts.
Carry on to their wayward
now,
Woodward Scott.
Now, if you're not that familiar with Scotty, he is a Baton Rouge native. He's also an LSU grad. He was LSU's vice chancellor from 1999 to 2004. That was a good time to be at the university, was it not? 1999, 2004. What occurred during that time?
A football national championship.
Yeah, and the start of that Final Four run for the women, I do believe, was around that time,
that's
too.
A thing,
yeah,
too. Yeah. You can throw a couple baseball national titles in there.
Yeah.
You feeling froggy?
Yeah, you feeling froggy. Yeah. See? Yeah. So, apparently, via the Glenn Gilbo, friend of the station, is Woodward was already letting the word out that he would be the new AD early Wednesday, as the deal has been worked for several days. He's 55 years old. Oliva's resignation was confirmed late Wednesday by LSU. He had been athletic director since 2008, but his end was nearing for several weeks, as this is what Glenn's reporting, as prominent LSU donor and Tiger Athletic Foundation founder Richard Lipsey and others close to LSU have been working behind the scenes for a change in leadership. So,
well, there you go. That lays that out.
Yeah, when you're the head of one of those foundations and you're a big time booster,
the founder of the foundation, not just even the head. Like, I mean, that's
when the foundation founder calls your office.
When the foundation founder has found you to be not finding proper things for his university, he has now found a problem.
Yeah. You know, you take the president of the university,
right,
takes that phone call and goes, "Oh, yes, 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 sir.
Yes, whatever
yes,
you
sir.
Say.
Yes, sir. Say. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for your time, sir." That's how that works.
You don't even need the other end of that phone conversation. You know how that went.
People always talk all the time, you know, the most powerful person in a, you know, at a university is the president. And I'm like, "Bro, you have no idea how that actually works."
I mean, everybody answers to somebody, more or less. That's a pretty safe statement. But I look at it this, you were saying how Joe Oliva, he's stepping down, But we'll still be, I guess, you know, if you hang around LSU's campus and you know the inner workings, you'll still see Oliva around there because, and I have to type this out to make sure I read it correctly. He will be his new role will be the special assistant to the president for donor relations.
AKA, we're going to keep you on payroll. You're going to get a check, but don't come to the office.
Right. To me, that sounds like the guy or gal dressed up like the Statue of Liberty or in like the crawfish suit on the sidewalk with the cash for gold arrow spinning it and throw it in the air and twirling around their head like, look, over here, give us money. We've got a cool thing. Remember me? I'm the Statue of Liberty. I'm pretty cool, right? Or even better, I didn't even think of this till just now, like the fake Statue of Liberty. And it's like, look, I kind of look like the real thing over there. And Joe Oliva's like, look, I kind of look like I used to be the athletic director. Come over here and give us some money.
I just imagine there being a portion of grass somewhere on LSU's campus that they'll have Joe Oliva on, and there'll be all those inflatable guys that
wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man. Wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man.
And then there's just Joe in between.
Just
the university
sitting
money.
Sitting in style. Crisscross applesauce.
Now, with Woodward, he does have experience of firing and hiring coaches. He's the one that removed Kevin Sumlin after the 2017 season there at A&M and hired away sitting national championship coach Florida State and former popular LSU offensive coordinator, Mr. Jimbo Fisher. Now, mind you, Joe tried to hire him not once but twice in 2015 and 16, and LSU Board of Supervisors member – or sorry – former LSU Board of Supervisors member Stanley Jacobs told Glenn Gilbo this: Scott will hit the ground running. He knows the university. He knows all the players around the university. And, quote, he hired Jimbo when Oliva couldn't get it done. This is also the same cat. He just got done hiring Buzz Williams to come be the head basketball coach there at Texas A&M, too. So this guy knows how to get the big fish to come to your university. Have we not had that issue at LSU under Joe Oliva? Have I not heard from Tiger fans right here on this station? Oh, he settled for Ed Orgeron. He settled for this guy. He can't hire anyone. He can't get the big names to come to LSU. We're a top-notch program. I do believe you got your guy in place that's going to be able to get that done. Just saying. We'll talk more about the LSU athletic director drama with our next guest, John Marques of The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on 103.7 The Game. Before we get back to the sports talk, just a reminder about today's severe weather threat throughout Acadiana. All state offices are going to be closed today, guys. All the Catholic schools in the Diocese of Lafayette will be closed as well, with two exceptions. That's Turlings High in Lafayette and St. Bernard School in Brobridge. Both of those are only going to be open long enough to present their passion plays for the Easter week to their fellow students, faculty, and parents, and then they'll be dismissed at 10:30 a.m. All public schools in Evangeline Parish are also going to be closed. All five locations of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Acadiana will be closed due to the severe weather threat as well. So make sure to be safe out there. If you don't need to get out into the weather, do not. Just stay at home, and we'll keep you updated with any more severe weather hitting the area.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Raymond. Let me ask you on the air. I'm going to leave early today, okay?
That's fine, Cody.
I'll get my work done. Don't worry.
You live in Pointe Coupee, so yes, I don't want my producer out in severe weather. That is correct.
We'll get it done, though. I won't bail. We'll be fine.
Appreciate you.
Ride or die.
Ride or die. Oh, there it is. Ride or die.
Whoa.
Oh. We've started off this edition of RP3 in Company, talking all about the Joe Oliva situation. Once again, the longtime athletic director, 11 years there at LSU, stepped down officially yesterday. They've already had his replacement in Mr. Woodward, who's a LSU grad and formerly worked at LSU. They're poaching him away from Texas A&M, which I do believe will ratchet up that rivalry between the two schools, just saying. And we'll talk more all about that with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on the senior columnist for the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com, the one and only John Marquise. John, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. How about you, Ray?
Doing well. I would assume LSU fans, I know you're not one of them, but I would assume LSU fans from central Louisiana down to south Louisiana are happy this morning that Joe Oliva is now no longer the athletic director there at LSU. I know you wrote a column about Joe Oliva and how he took a gamble essentially with bringing back Will Wade and how that situation went down, and you know, we'll have to see if it's going to pay off. Well, it didn't pay off for Joe because they reinstated him on Sunday, and on Wednesday he's quote-unquote resigning his position. Your thoughts when you heard the news?
I'm still a little stunned by everything that transpired, and not that Joe Oliva was fired. I mean, goodness knows that he never should have been hired in the first place. I'm stunned that they fired him and turned around and hired his replacement, you know, the same day. That's what's stunning to me. And not only hired his replacement, but from all indications, hit a home run in the hire. I mean, go back and look at LSU's history of athletic directors. They never do that. They always screw it up. And, I mean, somebody on the board of trustees, I think, finally just had enough and said, here's what we're doing, and if you don't like it, you're going to be out next. And, you know, it leads the question, how much job security does F. King Alexander have as school president? Because he and Joe were almost tied to the hip. But, yeah, kudos to the board of trustees for, you know, ending LSU's long nightmare.
Yeah, the long nightmare. And it just, you know, there were always indications that Joe was always, he always appeared to be on thin ice with maybe folks in the media and the fan base, but the university always supported him. The fact that he kept his job when he tried to fire Les Miles, tried to hire Jimbo Fisher, then decided during the third quarter of the regular season finale that, in fact, he was going to keep Les Miles, as then Les Miles is carried off the field for one final time to only fire him three games into the next season. That alone should have got him the axe, but it didn't. Neither did his hires and his other hirings for the major sports. I mean, this guy constantly got a get-out-of-jail-free card, it seemed like.
Well, you know, and it's weird. It's the even go back to the Les Miles debacle, where he turned Les Miles into a martyr that nobody, I mean, LSU fans agree he's a nice guy, but he had to go, and he turned him into a martyr. The thing that's never come out is, who made the final call? Was it Joe Oliva, or was it F. King Alexander? Was it Bobby Jindal? Nobody, that story hasn't been, the final story hadn't been told there, but yeah, his, you know, and you look at the Will Wade mess, you know, Will Wade has never met the media to say what has happened. Joe Oliva's never met the media. He met, you know, he talked with a couple of, you know, editorial board members of the Advocate, maybe one sports writer, never held a press conference to even announce why he was reinstating him. Joe Oliva never met the media unless somebody stuck a gun to his head. He sort of hid behind the curtain, and you can't do that. And all of his coaching hires at LSU turned out to be disasters, the process. Even the one coach he's gotten right, Beth Torino, the softball coach, apparently great, great softball coach. He hit a home run there, but that was only after he hired Pat Murphy from Alabama, who spent a day in Baton Rouge and then backed out of the job. So, you know, not even that went smoothly, you know, and that just seems, you know, and I think the basketball situation is just a capper on, you know, like I said, it still baffles people why LSU hired him in the first place. Duke was waiting to fire him and get rid of him. And LSU opens it on and said, hey, you know, Joe Lombardi, the former president, said, why don't you come down here? And he shoved him through. And, you know, I think he kept his job because, you know, you look at the revenue that LSU Athletics brings in. And admittedly, it has gone up during Joe Oliva's tenure. But he's sort of like Roger Goodell. And you know, Roger Goodell keeps his job because he makes his owners a boatload of money. Well, Joe Oliva made LSU a boatload of money. But what I don't think some people or the people, his supporters, realize, it didn't matter who was athletic director. LSU was always going to make a boatload of money. And during his tenure, what happened? The SEC Network. So guess what? The revenues were going to go up anyway. I think that's what kept him in power as long as it did.
We're talking to John Marquez, senior columnist for the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com. But I didn't think, John, I'm still a little surprised. I know there has been a groundswell of support to get rid of Joe, and there's reports of that he may be stepping down as early as, say, 2 weeks ago. But he didn't get the axe with how he butchered the first Les Miles situation, and he didn't get the axe after he mishandled the second situation and got embarrassed again by Jimbo Fisher using him to get a better job or to get a pay raise. I mean, Jimbo used Joe Oliva not once but twice and had egg all over Joe's face and LSU. And then the second time around, when they were trying to figure out if Edo was going to be the guy or not, Tom Herman did the same thing. And yet a lot of people even then go, we're LSU, damn it. We're better than this. Coaches should want to come here. They shouldn't be using us to get better jobs or to get more money. What's going on? Why are we doing this? Why are we constantly being embarrassed when it comes to this situation? And it didn't happen then. Why do you think it's happened now? Why is the Will Wade situation the breaking point after incident after incident after incident?
Well, one is, I mean, you know, whether LSU fans want to admit it or not, Will Wade is landing LSU on NCAA probation. I mean, the wiretaps, I mean, I know there are allegations, but what he was caught on wiretaps doing is a major NCAA violation. It may not be a federal law breaking, but it's breaking NCAA rules. He offered a sizable inducement to get a player to come to LSU, and there's no telling what else is out there. So, you know, that's his major basketball hire. And I think the breaking point, and I'm trying to – I don't know all the ins and outs of the politics of the LSU Board of Trustees, but, all right, nothing has changed since March 8th when LSU suspended Will Wade, other than he finally met with LSU officials.
Correct.
Nothing has changed, and so now you're reinstating him. You know, and I still go back to they should have just played out the season, letting him coach it out, because at this point – you know, the season was 90% over with. If NCAA, you know, if you have ineligible players, the season's going to be stripped from the record books regardless. Roll the dice, see how far you can go in the NCAA tournament. And he, you know, Joe Leave and F. King sort of sabotaged everything. And, you know, the emails that were released this week made it clear that F. King said, all right, you need to suspend Will Wade because he won't meet with you. Well, you know, think about your work situations. If you... your boss says, hey, I need to meet with you, and you refuse. Do you still have a job?
No.
Probably not. And then he comes back, and, you know, clearly Sunday, Joe Oliva is the one that made the call that, hey, he's satisfied his contract obligations. He satisfied his contract obligations. Not, hey, he denied anything. He vehemently defended his situation and explained everything in detail. It was just he met his contract obligations, so now we're going to reinstate him. You know, at this point, I don't see what the difference is, but I don't know if that was the breaking straw, that nothing has really changed in Will Wade's situation other than he's now back in good graces with some people. I don't know if that was the final straw. You know, and it's sort of the delicious irony of all this is, you know, give Scott Woodward credit. You know, he did at A&M what Joe Oliva couldn't do at LSU. And then, you know, somebody, apparently, I don't know how long this has been going on. It's when Will Wade was first suspended that started the recruitment to get Scott Woodward to come home. But, you know, they didn't do anything until they had Scott Woodward signed and done. Nobody leaked anything. So, you know, if Joe Leva kept his mouth shut back in November 3-4 years ago and waited until the final game was over with, waited another day, So if you get a chance, Jimbo Fisher would be the head coach with LSU Tigers, and Joe Legal would probably still have a job.
John, I want to switch over before we let you go. I want to get your reaction about what the New Orleans Pelicans did. I think it's a slam dunk hire. David Griffin, this is a guy that learned the business as a front office guy for the Phoenix Suns when they had an immense amount of success there in the late 90s, early 2000s. He worked with Danny Ainge over there, as well as what he did with Cleveland as their general manager, building a roster that went to the finals three straight years, got LeBron James to come back home, traded for Kevin Love. This is a smart, dynamic, young basketball mind. How impressed are you that the Pels were able to get David Griffin to come in to be their vice president of basketball operations?
You know, it's probably the best thing that they've done since they moved to New Orleans. And you know, they've done a lot of dumb things since they moved to New Orleans. But this is not
Pierre the Pelican, the mascot, the first one that looked like he was on drugs. Obviously, that's tops the list, yes?
No comment. I mean, but I still have the King Cake Baby bobblehead in my office. So that is a creepy mascot. But no, the thing that it should be encouraging to all Pelican fans is one, Anthony Davis is still a member of the Pelicans, and two, I think he and his representatives might be impressed that all right, this guy's pretty good. He knows what he's doing, and don't forget, he's got a relationship with LeBron James, which means he's got a relationship with Anthony Davis' representation, Rich Paul and all them, because he has dealt with LeBron James when they were in Cleveland. And I like the fact he said, I need to meet with Anthony Davis to find out, is there any way we can keep him here? You know, I don't know. I think I'm wondering if Anthony Davis' frustration with everything that went on had more to do with Dale Demps than anything else. They're not like he apparently likes New Orleans. He liked playing for the franchise. But I think he just got frustrated that nobody could build a team around him, or Dale Demps refused to build a team around him. Now they look like they have someone that knows what he's doing. And whether Anthony Davis stays or goes, you know, Pelicans fans should have confidence that, all right, things are going to be okay and we're going to have the best trade made possible if he does go. And guess what? Maybe we can start building the team through the draft, which has been an anomaly for the last decade.
John, appreciate the insight as always. Thanks for coming on early this morning, brother, with the news of Joe Oliva and what's going on with the Pels. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
No problem, Ray. And have a happy Easter.
You too. John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com joining us. When we come back, we'll wrap up this first hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've been talking heavy on the Joe Oliva situation, him resigning as the athletic director at LSU, his replacement already in place, Mr. Woodward, who is an LSU grad and worked with LSU for nearly half a decade. They poached him away from Texas A&M. We dissected that a little bit more with our last guest, John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com senior columnist. So we'll wrap up this first hour talking a little Raging Cajuns. You know, the softball team is one of the best in the nation, in case you haven't heard. You get an opportunity to go catch them live at Lamson Park. They have a three-game set against Georgia State starting today. We got the Easter weekend, so they're playing the games early, everyone. The Raging Cajun softball team, the Raging Cajun baseball team, who's on the road at UT Arlington, and, of course, LSU baseball at home versus Florida. They're all playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday because of the Easter holiday weekend. Raging Cajun softball team is ranked number 10 in the country. They have not dropped a single conference game yet, and they have tied the mark for the best start in Sun Belt history, 18-0. A record they already held themselves twice before.
So they're the 1, 2, and 3 teams on that list. That's well done.
Yes.
All these games that Ray's talking about, maybe with the exception of the UL-UT Arlington baseball series, because that's in Arlington. I don't know how the weather is. I know it was bad. I don't know how it is there now. But all those games are tentatively scheduled for these times.
Correct.
Nothing has been officially changed as of yet. If we get any official word down the line that these game times have changed, we'll let you know. But as of right now,
the softball game has already been changed. It was changed yesterday. It got bumped all the way back to 7:30 first pitch. And that's not because of the weather. That's because of Georgia State's traveling.
Okay. Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
Okay, so already that game has already been pushed back.
Which seems like the opposite thing of what you would try to do on a day like today when they're the only two schools that actually have kids there today are letting out at 10:30 a.m. I don't think you really would want to push things farther back into the day. We'd probably want to.
That is correct. More than likely, if I had to guess, I would say that these teams, in particular UL softball and LSU baseball, are more than likely going to do a doubleheader on Friday or Saturday.
Right.
Okay.
And if you have to get your, and this is still on topic but off subject, it's off the sports subject but still on topic of the weather. If you are getting your crawfish or something today for your crawfish boil on Good Friday or anything like that, just keep that in mind with the weather as well. Everything needs to be moved up on your itinerary today. Because I know we're doing crawfish tomorrow, and we're supposed to try to get them tonight and keep them in, you know, the fridge overnight and whatnot. And it's just going to be a little more difficult moving around doing what you would think would be a simple task. Is going to be a little more tedious and difficult today.
That's correct, because of the threat of severe weather. So, as Cody says, these games are scheduled. Does not mean that they will be played. Okay, because of the threat of severe weather. Once again, you guys have to make sure to be careful out there on the roads today. As we've stated before, all state offices are closed. All the Catholic schools in the Diocese of Lafayette will be closed today, with the exception of being Turlings in Lafayette and St. Bernard in Brobridge. Those two are having their Passion Play presentations, but they will be wrapped up by 10:30 a.m., okay? And they're going to send everyone else home. Go home, go home. All the schools, public schools in Evangeline Parish, are closed today as well. So, and all five locations of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Acadiana are closed today due to this threat of severe weather. So, if you don't have to be out on the road, stay home. It's not worth it. Y'all just take care of each other. Make sure you got the batteries. Make sure you got your flashlights. Make sure you got your snacks. The whole nine yards. Y'all be safe out there today. That's going to do it for the first hour here of RP3 and Company. When we come back live in studio, he is the legend, Danny Broussard, STM, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And it's our privilege to welcome on our next guest live in the studio. He is one of the most accomplished coaches in all of Acadiana and the entire state of Louisiana. He just wrapped up his 36th season at the helm of the STM Cougars boys basketball program. He also serves as the alumni director there at STM. He has 889 career wins, just 11 shy. I'm sorry, 989 career wins, just 11 shy. There's so many wins, Coach. It's just hard to keep track. 989 career wins, just 11 shy of the 1,000 mark. He's won 4 state championships, 3 state runner-ups, and he's been to the top 28 13 times. It's our privilege to welcome on the one and only Danny Broussard. Coach, how you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning, Raymond. Good to be here. I just want to say this, that when you said 37 years, I want everybody to understand I started when I was 15 years old, so let's get that straight, right?
I like that. It was a different time back then.
That's right.
It was a different time back then.
Yeah.
Coach, we talked a little bit off air, and I know, you know, the basketball season's completed, and I know on first glance people were like, well, Coach, you got no, this is your downtime, right? That's not the case. No. What you got going on? How many irons you got in the fire right now, Coach?
Yeah, no, you're right. I tell everybody I love when it's basketball season because I kind of can just concentrate on that. But like right now, we've already started AAU basketball, you know, which I'm not a big fan of. But in this day and age, you almost have to play, you know. So we keep our own little team together. We play some AAU games. I went and watched that a couple of weekends ago at Youngsville. Then, you know, you mentioned about the alumni director. So we're right in the middle of a capital campaign right now, Raymond. So never a day goes by where we're not doing something with that. And then, you know, I'm also planning for my Slam and Jam basketball camp coming up in the summertime. So kind of got, you know, three irons in the fire going at the same time. So, but that's the nature of the beast of my job. And I really enjoy it, though. You know, I shouldn't complain about it because it's really fun. I enjoy it and just what I do.
How long have you been doing that, your basketball tournament, Coach? How long has that been going on?
The Sunkiss Shootout?
Yeah.
Oh, we started that. My brother Ricky started. It's kind of a funny story you asked that. We didn't have one the first year, and everybody said, well, why wouldn't you, you know, when you're brand new school, why wouldn't have one? Well, we called people up and said, St. Thomas, what? Who? Where are you located at? You know, I never forget, we get to Lake Charles, an American Press tournament. It's the first time we ever went to, and Lake Charles, right there in Lake Charles, everybody says, what school, where are y'all from? You know, because it was a brand new school, nobody knew St. Thomas More.
Right.
Raymond, interesting story about that. We go play Redemptorist High School out of Baton Rouge, okay? I think they had won, I don't know, 15 state championships. They had just come back from a national tournament in Memphis, Tennessee. They were nationally ranked, like, I think, number 7 in the nation. And, you know, they scheduled us first game because I'm thinking they probably, you know, the guy's thinking, you know how it is, tournament, you kind of first-round game. You know, an easy one for – you want them to be in the finals, and so you kind of build it up. Easy first-round game, then it gets more difficult. So us and them first game on a Thursday night, never forget as long as I live. We really caught them at the right time, Raymond, because, I mean, don't get me wrong, we had a good, solid team, but, I mean, Redemptorist was loaded, 6'9". You know, they were just loaded. Derek Taylor, Howard Heisey Carter. We go and upset them by 1 point in the first round of that tournament. And I'll never forget, Ricky came in the locker room, and, man, we were pumped up. And he said, we just put St. Thomas More on the map in Louisiana. You know, so people started knowing where we were, you know, pretty early because of that Redemptorist win.
A long time to be the head coach at one one location. Mm-hmm. And I know it's very much a family affair for you there at STM, Coach. Over the years, with the success that you had, the wins piling up, look, I know how this works. I'm assuming that there was other schools, maybe private schools or even public schools, not only here in the area but in the state, that made probably a few phone calls to you over the years and said, hey, Coach, won't you come over to us? You don't have to tell us who those schools were, but why was STM your home? Why did it become your home in an era of so many coaches that will leave after 3 or 4 years, go other places? Yeah. Why did STM become your home?
Man, that's a great question. To be honest with you, the only college opportunity I ever had was when my brother left at Nichols. You know, they spoke to him. That's the only college that ever, you know, I ever had a chance to go to. But, you know, it's crazy. But, you know, somebody once asked me this question, and this is crazy. If my brother Ricky had not gone on to college, suppose he would have stayed at St. Thomas More, because, I mean, it's a good school, right? You know, they said, well, you certainly would have taken, you know, gone on and been a head coach somewhere else, right? And I said, you know, That's something I think about, and I said I might be the assistant coach at STM for him for 37 years. I love this school. I like Lafayette, so it's just hard to say. But STM is a special place. I think once you know I got into it, and my camps kind of grew and became successful. You know, it's just an ideal place for me. And Raymond, I'm not sure there's a better high school job, you know, in the state of Louisiana. There may be a couple of places that maybe have a little bit better facility. I mean, our facility is 30-something years old. It's, you know, it only sits 1,600, where, you know, you have some that fit 2,500, 3,000. But as far as for the job itself, I'm really not sure there's a better job in the state of Louisiana. So, no, and at this point in time, for sure, I'm not going anywhere now. You know, I'm going to die there. So, yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
Coach, it's been a little bit more than a month, but have you been able to calm down and get any sleep after the double overtime thriller?
Raymond, I watched that replay I'd actually taped it, you know, because I knew it was on. So I actually taped it. But the game was so long that on the Cox, I didn't think about taping that. You know, I had the next segment, the next show. So I get back to watching. There's like 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter when everything happened, you know. So I'm like, oh,
nice.
Yeah. So then I had to wait for the replay. It was unbelievable to me to watch the things that happened from, you know, like the 4 minute mark on and then the first overtime and the second overtime. What was really crazy was I really thought that we had never trailed in the second overtime. I said, in the second overtime, we kept the lead and we just had the lead the whole time.
Right.
We were down by four in the second overtime. Never even realized that. And so you're watching that replay and you're like, there's so many things. One kid misses the layup for them, you know. You're like, oh, my God, if he makes that layup, we don't win it.
Right.
You know, and then we made some big plays, obviously. But, yeah, to replay that game, Raymond, there's almost no explanation for it, how things have to fall into place, certain plays had to happen. It was just one of those deals where you can't explain. Our guys just kept battling, you know, some of the breaks went our way. You know, we didn't get every break. I thought that was a definite charge in the last play where the kid shot two free throws. But, you know, how would you explain to him that, you know, this kid misses two free throws and with two seconds on the clock and just force it to the next overtime? So, I always said you have to be a little bit lucky. You know, if I look back on all the state championships I had, somewhere along the way, we had some luck to get there, you know. And obviously, you got to have some talent. You have to have players, but you have to have some luck as well. And I mean, man, we just got in that fourth quarter. It looks like everything that, you know, a loose ball, everything went our way.
We're talking to STM, longtime STM head boys basketball coach, Danny Broussard. Coach, with everything that you've accomplished, you're only 11 wins shy of 1,000. You've won four state titles, now back-to-back after this year's. Right. You've sent so many kids and given them the opportunity to play college ball or just to be able to go to college. What keeps you motivated? What keeps that fire in your belly with everything that you've already accomplished?
I hate to lose. I hate to lose. I'm the worst loser. This is a crazy story, and I have calmed down a lot, Raymond. In my early days, I really was. I mean, I probably was out of control, to be totally honest with you, you know. But I have settled down. But this is a true story. We go play St. Martinville on a Tuesday night, and it's always a tough place to play. And, man, we came up with a big win. It put us in first place. And on that Friday, we happened to play Bo Shane. And Bo Shane had a legendary coach before this. Francis Singleton was a great, great coach. And we would talk all the time. We it's funny how it is. You compete, but some coaches you just become friends with, you know.
Right.
He was one of those guys. And the year before, I went to pick up a tape. He was letting me borrow a tape back just before the huddle days when you could just, you know, send it in 10 seconds. You got the game. So I went to – he lived off of Martin Luther King Boulevard in Sunset. So I went to him. We had coffee. We visited. And that year, he had us by 17 at halftime. And we wound up squeaking a one-point win. He told me. He said – and Francis had never beaten me. And he said, man, coach, I really thought I had you this year. I said, yeah, Francis. I said, I did too at halftime. I can tell you that. But this next year, Francis passed away, unfortunately, at a pretty young age. And we go to Bo Shane. Francis was no there along, a new coach. And after the big St. Martinville win, it's one of those games that you're supposed to win, you know, and we got beat, got upset at Bo Shane, the only time I've ever lost to Bo Shane. And when I'm telling you, I told you about I hate to lose. I didn't talk to I'm not talking about my own family members. I didn't talk to anybody for 4 days. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, finally. Well, I went back to school Monday. I had to start talking to somebody, but I wouldn't talk to anybody. That's how crazy I was. I just hate losing, and I watched film all that weekend. And Monday wasn't a pretty practice.
I would not trade anything in the world to be one of those players on that team that Monday practice, coach.
That wasn't fun that Monday. But anyway. I love the game. It's a passion of mine. You know, I've been around it my whole life. You know, Ricky coached me my freshman, sophomore year at Mo. We played, you know, I watched my brothers play basketball. When I was like a little bitty kid, I can never forget going to gyms here and there, like just all over, following them and, you know, watching them basketball. And then Ricky coached me. So I laugh about it. My first experience was 4-H basketball when I was in the sixth grade. My first time ever. Because I don't think we had Biddy basketball when I was a kid. No, we didn't have Biddy. So my first experience was playing 4-H basketball on an outside court in Kaplan. I'm talking about a court. You know, that's where we played our first game at. So, I've just been playing it all my whole life. It's just kind of been a part of me, and it's just what I love doing.
I hear this all the time from veteran coaches, and from the outside looking in, people go, well, it's more difficult now to reach these kids. But when I talk to veteran coaches, especially successful coaches like yourself, they always tell me it's not more difficult, it's just different.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that?
You know, I look back and I think this is a thing for in my situation. Our kids have a lot of things that they can do. You know, I mean, they you know, these video games, these wave runners. They just have a lot of things that on the outside that they can do besides playing basketball. You know, in my situation, again, sometimes we may go to some rural areas or inner city where they play a lot. They play basketball a lot. But my kids, I have them for that hour and a half to, well, early season, 2.5 hours. But and Raymond, that's pretty much not all of them, but for most of my kids, that's the time they're going to play basketball. After that, they go and they're doing other things. They're not
right.
They're not, you know, what I say, gym rats. You know, and I, like, don't get me wrong, I got a few of those now. I got a few of those. But there's just so much for those kids to do, you know. And, I mean, a perfect example is, you know, we've had to change our philosophy on road trips, you know. So we've always had a curfew when we go on the road. We've had a curfew that never changes. Lights out at, let's say, 11 o'clock, right? Well, we go to this one tournament, and, I mean, it's the second day. We play the first game, we win, we play the second day. I mean, we're playing horrible, and I'm like, and I turned to my assistant coach. I said, Coach, I don't know if it looks like they didn't sleep last night. I mean, we look lethargic. We're tired. And he said, Coach, they probably didn't. They were probably on the cell phones till 4 a.m. And it hit me that, you know what? You're probably right. So we surprised him that night. We made him. We said, 11 o'clock curfew. He said, come to our room. Bring your cell phone with you. So they all come to our room, bring the cell phone. And we could confiscate them that second night because we played so horrible. And so it's something that we do all the time now. This is kind of a funny sidekick to that. Side note, kids are, like you talk about, kids are different. They're smart, too, now. Raymond, don't kid yourself. They're smart. So we're on this second road trip, right? So we get all the cell phones, and we got smart, too. We started bringing I'm not going to claim credit. My assistant coaches were smart. They started bringing these what do you call it? Like this. What's this called? This is four.
Power cord.
Yeah. Well, you can put 4 and 1 or 5 and 1. So they bought those power cords, and they were charging for the kid. They told him, hey, bring your little charge. And we would charge them for them overnight so that they would have power the next day. So we had them all on charger. And so we have a group me, right? So we hit group me, and all the cell phones but one light up that got the message, right? So we look at that one. So we called the kid in and said, hey, where's your cell phone? He said, well, I turned it in. I said, oh, no, it's not your cell phone. You're on group me. You get all of our group texts, right? Yes, sir. Well, we group text all of you on your phone. That phone's dead. He had bought, I guess it's his mom, for a dead phone from the house and turned that in. But we were one step ahead of him. You got to stay one step ahead, Raymond.
Oh, shame on you, Coach. That's savvy right there from that kid. You got to let him get away with that one, Coach. Come on.
He showed initiative there.
Right,
Coach.
I mean.
He thought he had us. He thought he had us. Yeah. So, but, you know, going to the kids, you know, I just think it's tougher in the fact that, you know, parents are different this day and age. You know, I think parents are more, you know, back in my days, I think when we won games, parents were excited that, you know, the kid was a part of a team. Now they want to see their kid play. They want playing time. He said they want playing time. So, you know, that's a little bit different, but kids still work hard. They still get after it. I really have too many problems.
Real quick before I let you go, Coach, I want to get your insight on something.
All right.
David Griffin, Pell's bringing this guy, young, dynamic guy, proven winner, knows how to build teams in the modern NBA. He had a very good press conference yesterday, strong kind of personality. What do you think about that hire for the state's NBA franchise?
I think it's a great hire, but I think his first thing he needs to do is get him a new – sorry, but he needs to get him a new head coach. I'm just not a Gentry fan at all. Not at all. So that's what I think his first priority should be.
Well, well, you know what we do. We'll just let David Griffin know. Go ahead and give you a call. We'll take care of that.
Yeah. I could never coach an NBA, trust me. No way. No.
Coach, appreciate you coming in, brother. Thank you so much. That's STM head boys basketball coach, a legend himself, Danny Broussard, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, it's time to recap Astros, Oakland A's last night's game. Did they keep the winning streak alive? We'll dive right in right here on 103.7 The Game.
Delivers a 1-1. That is hit sharply on a hop pass, Bregman, and it goes down the left field line. Canna around third. He'll score. On his way to second is Profar, and it is 1-0 Oakland. Astros down to their final strike.
Crowd's on their feet. 11,323 announced.
1-2 pitch. Swing and a foul tip into the glove of Fegley. Strike three, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros see their win streak end at 10 games. as the Oakland A's hold on for the 2-1 victory.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Houston Astros, the 10-game winning streak is snapped there with a one-run loss to the Oakland Athletics late last night.
Just couldn't push that win streak to the number that is the same. Forwards, backwards, upside down, right side up, inside out, and outside in. That would be the number 11.
Yes, yes, yes. I love it. I do love that. For the Astros, since eking out that 3-2 win against the A's back on April 5th, they had not lost. And the offense was amazing. They had slugged 20 home runs in that stretch with 20 doubles to surge atop the American League standings. The 10-game winning streak was its third in as many seasons. But Wednesday, that all came crashing down, because Tuesday they did get the win over the A's to get it to 10 games. But then last night there in Oaktown, Houston was held. The lineup just couldn't get anything going. Montez did a terrific job for the A's on the bump. He went 6 1/3 innings. He only gave up one run to Houston's formidable lineup. They only managed for the entire game, the Astros only got 4 total hits, one of those which came in the 9th inning. Blake Treinen, the A's closer, took care of it. So the winning streak comes to an end, but if you're the Astros, you're in great shape. I mean, because you're still now, despite the loss, 10-game winning streak is snapped. Despite that, and it's that weird 2-game series too, Cody,
I don't get it.
And it's a division game. That's the other thing that
it's not like there was a makeup game or something they were trying to do.
Right. That's one of those little scheduling quirks, so to speak.
Major League Baseball's it harkens back to like opening day, how the Cubs played on opening day and then had a day off, and then resumed the series with the same team after a day off. And now you've got the Astros, now that the season is getting into a rhythm, and they go and start a West Coast road trip, play 2 games, you know, play Seattle, 2 games against Oakland, and then come back and play on the road against the Rangers. The scheduling seems very weird in this little bracket here.
Oh, yes. It's a little obtuse.
Well, now you're being acute.
Ah, nice. As Cody alluded to, 3-game series at the rival Tejas Rangers. That will begin Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Just a reminder, because of LSU baseball being broadcast live on 103.7 The Game, we will have Astros on the rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette. Also 104.1 in Lake Charles on KVOL. So we'll have the Astros game broadcast Friday night and Saturday. Friday night, 7:05. Saturday, 7:05 as well, both of those games. But then Sunday, the Astros will be here on 103.7 The Game at 2:05 scheduled first pitch. So they're still first in the American League West, despite the one-run loss. It's not the end of the world. Okay, Oakland always plays Houston tough, right? That's just how they are. Even when Moneyball isn't succeeding there in Oaktown, they're still a scrappy bunch. They always have that identity where Oakland's always kind of a difficult team to beat. But the Astros are just fine. They're still tops in the AL West. They have all this momentum building off of the 10-game winning streak. And plus, they hate the Rangers. Right, so they hate the Rangers. It's their rival. It's their main rival. And I've always said this: they're going to be upset, angry, and fired up for losing, having the winning streak end against a team they should have mopped the floor with, right? With Oakland. If you're Texas, you would rather have the Astros come in with an 11-game winning streak, because now their winning streak has ended, and they have the bad taste in their mouth from the one-run loss last night. And the Astros are going to take that out on the poor Rangers in this three-game weekend series. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk more Stros with our good friend James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. The Astros' winning streak was snapped last night in Oak Town with a 2-1 loss to the Athletics, but the Astros are still in first place in the AL West. They're still trending as one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and we're going to dive more into that with our next guest. He is the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast. It's the one and only James Yasko. James, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, not too bad. These 9 p.m. games didn't kill me, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday on the air, James. I know we actually brought you up, and it's like, you know, it might have been off there where we're talking about, well, you know, James is going to have to stay up late to watch that. We're going to go to bed. we're not staying up for that late West Coast game for the Stros. All right, the sky is not falling. I know the winning streak has come to an end. It ended at 10 games, James, but still, this is a team that's number one, is the top team in the AL West, and now they get to go take their aggression out on the rival Rangers. Your thoughts about this winning streak and where this team is right now?
I mean, you know, to say that they're still not getting the hits with runners in scoring position that statistically you could expect. So the fact that they're 12-6 and come, you know, obviously they lost last night. It's going to happen a lot over the course of 162 games. You still have to feel pretty good about it because, you know, there's some guys that still haven't quite gotten it going.
So you're saying there's still guys that haven't quite get it going. Who in the lineup do you think are still kind of struggling a little bit, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think, you know, Tony Kemp is struggling. Tyler White is struggling. Chirinos is going to give you, you sort of take whatever you can get from your catcher. But especially with it's that runners in scoring position that's just, it's dreadful, you know, for a lot. I think Gurriel's hitting like 167 with runners in scoring position. And I think the one hit was the grand slam. So that was a good hit, I guess. There's, I don't know that there's anything to, you know, I think the idea of someone being clutch has sort of been dispelled a little bit. I mean, obviously, you'd rather in a clutch situation, you'd rather have Bregman than like a Ledesma Diaz up to bat. But that's because Bregman's a better hitter. And so Gurriel's not a 167 hitter. The hits are going to come, and the same thing with Tyler White. He's like 0-for-8 with 5 strikeouts and with runners in scoring position. That's going to change. So once they start to get those hits and string hits together, like sort of how they keep the lineup moving, you know, things are going to continue. They're going to continue winning at a pretty good clip.
We're talking to James Yasko. He's the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, the number one Astros podcast in the entire land. James, I see some good performances here from the other guys that take the bump that are not named Justin Verlander. We're here in the middle of April now. Who's impressed you the most of the other starting pitching?
You have to respect Colin McHugh and what he's done through a few turns of the rotation. You know, any sort of question that he wasn't going to have the same performance after a year in the bullpen, I think those have sort of been dismissed. And yeah, he's going to hit some bumps along the way. Every pitcher does. But I'm impressed. I'm extremely impressed with McHugh. And I'm impressed with Wade Miley. The strikeouts aren't there the last couple of starts, but he pitches quickly, and he just gets out.
James, you know, we talked about early in the season, you know, I know some Astros fans, and you're obviously more connected to it living over there in Texas, is that, you know, the horrendous start made people panic. And, you know, I know A.J. Hinch was like, it's a long season. We're going to be fine. And sure enough, they were fine, even though they still have some things to work on even right now. The Yankee series seems to be what kind of turned it around, and they kind of turned a corner there. Even with their struggles that they've had, they're still the number one first-place team in the AL West. Were you surprised at all from the sluggish start, and were you surprised at all that they were able to so quickly turn it around?
No, yes and no. I mean, obviously, when you have Verlander and Cole, and I think it was McHugh going in that Ranger series to lose, or maybe it was Miley, Verlander, and Cole. You know, to lose the Verlander and Cole starts, that's obviously not ideal. So it was a little bit surprising at the beginning. Every team goes through slumps or goes through losing streaks. Theirs just happened to be at the beginning of the year when everyone was just, you know, just paying attention. But am I surprised that they turned it around? Absolutely not. Like, that's what this lineup is and the pitching staff is geared to do. It's built to win a lot, and it's built to win now.
James, let's talk a little bit about this team. I know Altuve's power outage has been impressive. It's got a lot of national headlines. Why do you think he's been able to he's basically said he's not really trying to hit home runs, right? It's just happening. For whatever reason, it's just the perfect combination of where he's hitting the ball and the kind of pitches that are being thrown to him. He's not known for having that outburst of power. He's had it this year, and he's just kind of riding it for as long as he can. Your thoughts on Jose Altuve all of a sudden becoming a power hitter?
You know, I mean, he's shown pop before. You know, last year was the outlier. I mean, he is a perennial 330, you know, maybe 340 hitter. And I think last year is just a testament to how hurt he was. I mean, like, he played half a season with a broken kneecap. I have some tendonitis, and I haven't gone running in like 2 weeks. So, you know, he is an absolute hitting machine. When he gets the pitch when he's getting pitched to the way that he has been, being fully healthy and with the swing that he has, it's a short, compact swing. He's gonna drive the ball a few times. It was 2 years ago, he hit like 24 home runs. I don't know that he's a 25 home run hitter, but he's a 20 home run hitter. And so it's not surprising to see that when he connects fully healthy, he's going to drive the ball out of the park.
The Astros begin a 3-game set, James, with the rival Rangers. And I just, for someone who's not that familiar with this rivalry, I know it's the arch rival, but I grew up with the Astros being in the National League. Okay. So How was this a rivalry back in the day when you didn't have National League playing American League, first of all? That's still a new kind of era type of thing. And the Astros moving over from the NL to the AL, why is this such a rivalry with all that in mind?
Yeah, I think it's the natural Houston-Dallas rivalry.
Okay.
You know, it extends beyond football, and it's into football and also music and cuisine and it's everything is basically Houston versus Dallas. As far as the rivalry with the Rangers, it was fun to win. It was fun to play them back when they did the Silver Boot for interleague play.
Yeah.
When the Astros were in the NL, but it's sort of now that they're in the AL, it's, you know, the first couple of years, I think it's more fan driven than it is player driven. You know, cause the first couple of years that the Astros were in the American League, it didn't go real well. It's kind of at the depths of the rebuild, and Rangers fans have for the most part have only been fans since like 2010, so they don't have any knowledge of working knowledge of baseball.
That's a good. I like that. Continue. Sorry.
now I think it's the tables have turned a little bit, and it's just sort of fun. But I think as far as a rivalry going. It was sort of I guess we might as well hate you now. And it's just sort of gone from there.
What are you looking for? Do you anticipate, James, that, you know, I made this claim on the air. If I'm the Rangers, I actually preferred if the Astros had won last night and have that winning streak heading into the game, because now you're going to have a very angry, determined Astros squad that feels like they dropped a game, let a game get away from them against an inferior ball club in the Oakland A's, and now they get to play their quote-unquote state rival. If I'm the Rangers, that's the worst-case scenario for me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it could. So that could certainly be the case. I don't know that, and the Rangers have some. Their pitching staff is an absolute mess. But you know, they've got Mazzara and Gallo and Andrews. Like they've got some decent players. I mean, they took two of three from the Astros earlier. So I mean, but I don't know that there's too much excitement about playing, about anybody having the Astros come to town. So you know, I guess that they lost, the winning streak's over, so you know there's not a whole lot of pressure to keep that rolling, and they have the day off today, so you know they're going to come in with some rest and be relaxed. I think it was Josh Reddick who after the game last night said that you know it's time to get a little bit of revenge. So it's probably not the best place to best state of mind to have to play the Astros.
Talking to James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast. James, there's this thought process that last year's Astros team was actually more talented and better than the 2017 team that won the World Series. And now there's people talking that this year's team may be the best of the three. Where do you side on that kind of discussion?
I think that's true, or at least it has the ingredients to be true. You know, everyone has that experience from 2017 under their belt. They have the experience of losing in the ALCS in 2018 under their belt. And they've got, you know, Gerrit Cole is more comfortable having pitched with the team for a year. Bregman turned into a legitimate superstar last year and is carrying that forward. And presumably Altuve and Correa are actually healthy. So if those things can stay true for, you know, for the next 6 months, I think, you know, it's at least a possibility that there's another parade coming in Houston at the end of October.
James, I appreciate you making some time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the three-game series. I know based on where you live, we've talked about this before on the air, that this rivalry gets a little interesting for you. So I guess we're hoping that the Astros sweep and you just won't wear your Astros gear. Is that correct? Is that how we're going to work this for this weekend?
No, I'm super aggressive about it, and I am perfectly willing to destroy friendships and relationships over three games in April.
Oh, that's my man. That's fandom right there, brother. James, appreciate it as always. Great stuff, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, have a good one.
James Yasko, willing to sacrifice relationships with family members and friendships. My kind of fan right there. Man, that man bleeds Houston Astros baseball. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, I want to dive into the terrific hire by the New Orleans Pelicans, the new man in charge there, the new vice president of basketball operations, David Griffin. We'll talk about that here on 103.7 The Game.
Make no mistake about this, we're in the business of competing for championships. This is also going to be the very last day you hear any member of basketball operations use that word. That's not a word that you just use. If other people want to use that word, that's for them. People in this building, everyone that plays for this team, Alvin and his coaching staff, they understand this. You don't say the word championship. You earn the right to have other people say it about you by the actions you take every single day. So walking out of here, we're all going to work to get better than we were yesterday. And all of you are going to work to get better than you were yesterday like you already have. Everyone here is going to do the same thing. And if we're really good at what we do in delivering on Mrs. Benson's vision, then everyone else can use that word for us. So from here on out, we can call that the C word. And that's all there is to it.
That is the new front office leader of the New Orleans Pelicans, David Griffin, in his introductory press conference yesterday. How can you not be impressed with this cat? Like, for real.
Shows up and creates a whole new C word.
Just shows up and he's, I like that. He just shows up. I love the attitude. I love the direction. You know he's going to make a good hire there with the general manager. They're coming out and saying that it appears that Alvin Gentry is going to be their coach. We'll dive into that with our next guest, Les East, at 8:02, whether or not that's a sound decision or not. But that's we'll save that discussion. This is a guy, once again, we talked about it yesterday in the program. This is a guy who worked alongside Danny Ainge in Phoenix for years. He was there for more than a decade. Learned the business, learned how to run a front office in the NBA. He was part of those great Mike D'Antoni teams there in Phoenix with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. Okay? So he knows how to build a team through the draft. He knows how to build a team with free agents. Remember, Steve Nash started his career with the Dallas Mavericks. He went to Phoenix. He learned the ropes. He earned his stripes, so to speak, there in the desert. And then he goes to Cleveland. And what does he do with the Cavs? He brings Cleveland its first world championship in, what, like 100 years for the entire town?
The whole city, yeah.
Or the first championship since the Browns won one with Jim Brown as running back. That predates the Super Bowl.
We're not counting the Miz winning the WWE championship, though. The Miz is Cleveland's favorite son. He has won the – he beat John Cena at WrestleMania one time. So we're not counting that. But other than that, yes, Cleveland. Fruitless for many a moon.
I was not anticipating the Miz reference. You caught me off guard.
He's from Cleveland.
I know he is.
He's the champ.
It
should count.
And now he's the champion of a reality television show. So
hey, that show is funny. And to point out, nowhere on that show does it say reality television. It says like WWE superstar. They don't try it because it's so obviously not a reality show that they don't even try to frame it as a reality show. They're like, just follow the life of WWE superstar Mike the Miz Mazanin and his wife and the It family.
It's like iced tea and cocoa.
It's very, right. Very much like that. And that was, they didn't try to claim that was a reality show either. It was follow these two famous people around. That's essentially what we've got. I digress.
But in Cleveland, he helped construct the Cavs roster to get them the three straight NBA finals. They won one there, the world championship. Once again, he was able to get LeBron James to come back home in spite of the best efforts of Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavs, and he got the Kevin Love trade done, took care of that. So this is a guy who knows how to construct a roster. This is a guy who knows how to deal with free agency and build through the draft. This is what he had to say yesterday about the apparent superstar going out of town in Anthony Davis. Maybe he's not going out of town. This is what he had to say about AD.
Rich Paul and I have spoken about Anthony, and I think we are both excited about what we could potentially build here. I have plans to sit down with them both. But once again, like with Alvin, the only reason history matters is that you can have a very frank, very candid conversation. Rich Paul and I were part of succeeding in the manner that they can understand, and they will understand when I say this. You are either all the way in or you are all the way out. And there is no in between. When the measure of success in your franchise is going to be championships and generational excellence, this is not something that we negotiate about. This is not something we make allowances for. This is something that you live every day of your life. And I have every reason to believe Anthony will want to do that.
I love that. I love the fact that he put it in Anthony's court and his agent's court and saying, look, we're committed to building here. I have a track record. You're either in or you're out. There's no more of this waffling going back and forth. You're either going to be part of the solution here or you're not. I love that talk. It was respectful but yet strong. Terrific stuff. And all the folks that say that Gail Benson is not committed to having a winner and that she's going to move the franchise, this is what the new leader of that front office had to say about that.
Mrs. Benson is 100% committed to making this a championship caliber franchise from top to bottom. And believe me, I made some outrageous demands in that conversation, and I'm very comfortable she's 100% committed.
He made some outrageous demands. Gail met them. That is a tremendous sign for this franchise. Can't wait to see the moves that they're going to make moving forward. That's going to wrap up the second hour here of RP3 and Company. When we come back, we're going to talk more about David Griffin and the New Orleans Saints season schedule being released.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
This is a great day. It's not a good day. It is a monumental day for this franchise, headed in the right direction with championship aspirations. I used it. I won't use it again, I promise.
That was Joel Myers, the voice of the Pelicans, talking about the hiring of David Griffin as the new vice president of director of basketball operations for them Pels. We're going to dive more into that with our next guest. But before that, just a reminder today, with the threat of severe weather that's had a lot of closures throughout the area, make sure to be safe out there, guys. Once again, all state offices are going to be closed today. All the Catholic schools in the Diocese of Lafayette will be closed today as well. There's two exceptions. That's Turlings Catholic High School here in Lafayette and St. Bernard School in Breaux Bridge. Both of those, though, will be dismissing at 10:30. They're going to simply be in school today for their presentation of their passion plays here for the Easter weekend. Then they'll be out. All public schools in Evangeline Parish will also be closed today, and all five locations of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Acadiana will be closed due to the severe weather. So make sure if you don't have to be out on the roads later today or throughout the day, do not. Stay at home, stay safe out there, and if you do have to be out there, be extremely careful with the threat of severe weather blanketing throughout Acadiana later today. But let's get back to the sports talk. We talked about it before the break, what I feel is like a tremendous hire for the New Orleans Pelicans, a smart, dynamic, young basketball mind, a guy that has been groomed by Danny Ainge over in Phoenix and then won a world championship there with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the Pels got themselves a terrific leader now in David Griffin. We're going to dive into that as well as the New Orleans Saints season schedule with our next guest. He is a Pels and Saints reporter for the CrescentCitySports.com. It's the one and only, our good friend Les East. Les, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How are you?
We're doing great, man. I know you were there at the presser yesterday for David Griffin. I know I saw some of your tweets, and you were pretty impressed, as was I. Your initial thoughts on the hire? What does this say about Gail Benson and her commitment to providing a winner for the city of New Orleans when it comes to their basketball team?
Well, I think it says a lot, and I think it's all good. I think for the first time since, I guess it was 2002, when the then Charlotte Hornets moved to New Orleans, this basketball franchise is potentially on equal footing with the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, since there's been dual ownership for the last few years in the sense of Mr. and Mrs. Benson owning both the Saints and the Pelicans, since they bought the Pelicans from George Shinn a few years back, I think there is an equal level of commitment to the basketball team compared to what there has always been for the football team. And I think they did that in a couple of ways. First, they did it by clearly stating that there's a delineation between the two organizations. You no longer have Mickey Loomis overseeing both of those with sort of a nebulous chain of command with him and Del Demps, who was the general manager. Now this is David Griffin's operation. He reports directly to Mrs. Benson. He is in charge of the basketball team. He has been given a green light to significantly enhance the manpower inside the front office for the basketball operation. And beyond that, they went out and got the person with by far the best resume on the open market, someone who is sought after by numerous NBA organizations. And the fact that David Griffin chose to come here when he could have gone to a lot of other places, I think is as good an indication of the commitment as you could have. He felt like this was the best opportunity for him among several opportunities. So it's potentially all the things you heard Bill Myers say, a landmark day, a monumental day. I don't think they could have done better in the general manager search than they did.
We're talking to Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. Les, I reflect back on the lessons that he's learned and the type of front office person that he is. He worked alongside Danny Ainge, who's one of the best in the business, right? In their time in Phoenix, he was part of those Mike D'Antoni teams that were so good and so fun to watch with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire, and then he goes to Cleveland. And I remember one of the first things he does when he gets to the Cavs, besides getting LeBron James to come on board, is that he makes the trade for Kevin Love with the T-Wolves. They had drafted Andrew Wiggins, and then he flips him, and he gets Kevin Love for him. Based on his past and his wheelings and dealings with free agents and the draft, what kind of approach do you think he's going to be taking with the Pels?
Well, one of the interesting things about him yesterday is I just think he has a lot of common sense, and he's not tied into any particular blueprint. And I think the way he talked about the Anthony Davis situation, I think, was a good example of that. He's not coming in saying you automatically have to trade him. There was some posturing to try and send a message to potential trade partners in what he said. But nonetheless, you know, he's not taking anything for granted. He comes in and you can build one team one way, you can build another one a different way. And I think he's coming in and he's going to make his own assessment of the Anthony Davis situation, and then he's going to decide whether there's a chance to keep him and whether that makes sense. And if there isn't, then he's going to look at how to trade him and look at his options. And does he go heavy with draft picks and young players, or does he try and get a veteran leader and some younger players? I just think he is open to what the possibilities are in any given situation and ready to choose what is best for that particular situation. And I think that open-mindedness and that flexibility is really important. And, you know, he's worked with a lot of really impressive people. He worked with Steve Kerr in Phoenix. He talked about Jerry Colangelo, a basketball Hall of Famer, and Jerry's son Brian as being two of his mentors in the NBA during his 17 seasons in Phoenix before he kind of took off on his own in Cleveland. And so I just think he has an excellent background, and I think he is wise enough to understand that every situation is unique and you have to be open-minded about what is going to be the best approach to any given situation. And I think that's what he's evaluating right now. And I would expect that he's going to come up with his game plan for rebuilding this roster very, very quickly.
Les, David is also immensely respected in NBA circles, not only with other front offices, as you alluded to. Other teams have tried to hire him during his tenure there in Phoenix, and then even after he departed Cleveland. Let's focus in on the Cleveland, because that was That ended up being the straw that kind of broke the camel's back in a lot of ways for LeBron James, because he held David Griffin in such high regard. And when he got ousted by Dan Gilbert in an impulsive manner, that did not sit well with LeBron James. And a lot of other teams and a lot of other players took notice of that. How much will the amount of respect level he has with some of the league's superstars aid him, not only with the Anthony Davis situation, but getting free agents to come there and whatnot?
Oh, I think that's significant, and I think he has a similar reputation with agents as well, which I think is very significant. If players don't have a preconceived opinion of an organization or its leadership, their agents are going to guide them, and I think, and this probably includes Rich Paul, who is Anthony Davis's agent, who, of course, dealt with Griffin a lot as LeBron James's agent. They seem to have a good relationship, meaning Paul and Griffin. And, I think when agents go to their players and say, look, this is the type of guy, this is the type of organization you want to be with, it carries a lot of weight. And so I think his reputation with players in general and with players through their agents, by all accounts, is very positive, and I think that's significant. And I just think that his hiring is going to be helpful in convincing free agents that this is an organization that has gotten its act together and that is committed to competing for championships and has made the effort and the commitment of financial and human resources to put together the type of operation necessary to do that. So I think people all over the NBA at every level took notice yesterday of what the Pelicans did, and I think it's all positive for the Pelicans.
We're talking with Les East. He covers the Saints and the Pels for CrescentCitySports.com. Les, I want to switch over to Saints. The schedule was finalized yesterday, was released with, for whatever reason, we needed a two-hour special to break it down on the main, on the big network there, which is just silly to me. Why not just release the damn schedule? Your thoughts about it? Every year we do this, we look at a schedule and we go win-win, loss-loss, loss-win-win, based on what we think the team is going to be or based on what they were last year, and it never ends up being that way. There's so much turnover with the playoff teams in the NFL. It's just a ridiculous exercise. But what are some of your initial thoughts from the finalized schedule? We knew who the opponents were, but we didn't know the structure and everything. Anything that stands out to you from the New Orleans Saints schedule?
Not a lot. I mean, to piggyback on what you said, the one thing that is certain is that our impressions of the schedule right now will not be consistent with our impressions come New Year's. It's not going to play out the way we anticipate that it will. They don't have a three-game road trip in the middle of the schedule like they had last year. That obviously they were able to handle that quite well. But nonetheless, that's not something you want to have. I think the schedule's a little more conventional in that regard. They do finish with back-to-back road games, which is not great, Tennessee and Carolina, but that's not something they can't deal with effectively if they have the kind of team we expect them to have. I do think they're going to get a lot of attention nationally at the beginning. They got the Monday night game with a very good Texans team to begin with, so they're going to be in the national spotlight, and the rematch with the Rams and the 3:25 slot, and they go to Seattle, and then they have a primetime game with the Cowboys. So that the whole month of September, they are going to be in big-time slots against good, really good teams, and they're going to get a lot of attention. So they are probably, by the end of September, they're going to be one of the most talked-about teams in the NFL, either as being an early Super Bowl contender or maybe as a team that might have difficulty living up to expectations because of a slow start, because that does appear to be a very challenging schedule, and it's one that's going to be played out on some very big stages.
Les, were you surprised at all? I mean, you mentioned the two West Coast games that are going to be the late afternoon time slots, the marquee kind of time slots for the day games. But they're on primetime three times this coming season. They start off with Monday Night Football against the Houston Texans, which regionally is going to be fantastic to start off the season. Then you mentioned the Sunday night game with the Cowboys. And then they also have, it appears, another primetime game. Well, two more primetime games, four. They got the Thanksgiving game at Atlanta. And then they also will host Indianapolis in the final regular season home game. Andrew Luck and the Colts come to town. Were you surprised that they had the Saints four primetime games?
No, not really. I believe it's capped at five. It wouldn't have shocked me if they put them on five times because they are as strong a Super Bowl contender as anybody in the NFL. They're entertaining to watch. There's every reason to believe they're going to be a Super Bowl contender again next season. They usually generate very good ratings, not only because so many eyeballs in Louisiana tune in, but a lot of other football fans tune in because they're fun to watch. So I thought that they would have a lot of primetime opportunities, maybe even the maximum of five. The one that maybe didn't seem so obvious on the surface was the Indianapolis game. But you have to keep in mind that, one, it's Drew Brees and Andrew Luck, but it's also the 10th anniversary of them meeting in the Super Bowl. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Saints had some sort of ceremony recognizing that team and brings back some key players from that team and will add something to the telecast beyond just the game itself.
Les, I appreciate you coming on, breaking everything down as always, my friend. We'll have you on next week to give us the draft preview. We'll see if any moves are made in between now and then, if the Saints move up, move down, trade away some picks, whatnot. We'll dive into that next week, brother. And you enjoy the rest of your week, my friend.
Thanks, Raymond. Stay dry.
Les East, CrescentCitySports.com, covers the Saints and Pels. Joins us every week. Terrific stuff, as always. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, LSU, Raging Cajuns, baseball teams. Get it together starting tonight with both three-game weekend series here. UL on the road, LSU at home versus Florida. We'll dive into that when we come back here on 103.7 The Game. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April a safe digging month here in Louisiana, and as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. Look, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines, guys, and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parse III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call if you like. ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. LSU baseball, UL baseball, both are going to be beginning three-game series tonight. They're scheduled to be in three-game series, rather. Due to the severe weather, we'll see if that holds true or if there needs to be some rescheduling involved. That said, LSU is coming off losing at Southern last week, then losing two out of three at Mizzou, and then losing the Wally Pontiff Classic for the second year in a row to the UL Raging Cajuns. They're going to be looking to get things back on track by bringing in and sending Florida team. This is a young team. This is not the veteran team that faced off with LSU in the College World Series a few years ago. This is a team that was kind of in rebuilding mode, younger players coming up. But they have found something down there in Gainesville. They're now ranked in the top 25. They're the number 25 team in the country. They're 25-14 overall. They're 6-9 in the SEC, though. That's interesting. And they're going to be taking on LSU, who's still ranked number 10 as of right now, 24-14, 9-6 in the SEC. Your start times, projected start times right now, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 6 p.m. tonight, 7 p.m. Friday, 2 p.m. on Saturday. You can listen to all three of those games live right here on 103.7 The Game. Now, the matchups, look, LSU leads this overall series by a pretty wide margin, like 62-50-1. But the Gators have won 7 of the last 10 meetings between the two teams, dating back to the 2016. And last season, Florida defeated LSU 4-3 on day 2 of the SEC tournament before LSU rebounded to eliminate the Gators from the tournament 2 days later, 11-0 in 7 innings. Right now, still be determined who's going to be pitching tonight for LSU, but Florida's going to throw out Tommy Mace, who's 6-3 overall with an ERA of 4.13. Game 2 will be Cole Henry for LSU, 3-2 overall with a 3.45 ERA. He's going to be taking on the sophomore right-hander Jack Leftwich, who's 4-2 overall for the Gators. And then Game 3, starters already set as well. Eric Walker for LSU, despite the up-and-down season, he's 2-3, 5.79 ERA. He's going to be taking on the freshman righty Christian Scott for the Gators, 3-2, 4.60 ERA. This is what Paul had to say. We played a lot of very big games against Florida over the years, and the series falls into that category. It's the start of the second half of SEC play, and we traditionally have played our best baseball at this time of the year. We'll see if that continues on for the LSU Tigers.
I didn't realize this was that line of the halfway point in the season. I overlooked that. So
for conference play, yeah.
Good to know. Good to know.
And UL is at that point as well. They had a rough week last week as well. As we know, they lost La Tech, McNeese State. They lost the first game to South Al, but they rebounded, took 2 of 3, won that series, and then, of course, beat LSU in the Wally Pontiff Classic down there in Metairie on Tuesday. They're going to be at UT Arlington, 3-game set, 6:30 tonight, 6:30 Friday, and then 2 o'clock on Saturday as well. So we'll see if the Raging Cajuns can build some momentum heading into the home stretch of Sun Belt play. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk to Ron Higgins about all things LSU right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's been a jam-packed show. We've dove into a lot of stuff. It's time to end today's show as strong as possible, and no one's going to bring it more than our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on the esteemed LSU beat writer for Tiger Details, the one and only Ron Higgins. Ron, how are you this morning, brother?
Wayman, how are you?
I'm doing well. Plenty to talk about on this random Thursday, my friend. Let's get right to it. I know you probably heard and got a feeling that something was going to be happening with Joe Oliva. Were you surprised, though, how quickly his departure occurred yesterday and then his replacement already was in place?
Well, I thought about 2-3 weeks ago that you know, maybe it was 2 weeks ago that if Wade came back, I don't know how that relationship with the work with Oliva. But even before that, I think there was a concerted effort by a couple of big money people at LSU to, I guess, gather the money to go get a new athletic director and get rid of Oliva. And it finally came to fruition Tuesday night. And obviously the wheels have been turning to line up the next guy, and they've lined up probably Scott Woodward in his mid-50s, and it's not young, but probably the the best, one of the best athletic directors in the nation, based on his track record at Washington, Texas A&M, and the fact that he's a Baton Rouge born and raised, an LSU graduate. And as far as I can remember, he's the first Baton Rouge native, I believe, to serve as an LSU, that will serve as an LSU AD. Joe Dean was the LSU graduate, but he was raised in Indiana. I think Scott might be the first one born and raised in Baton Rouge to become athletic director.
We're talking with Ron Higgins, Tiger Details. Ron, what was it about this situation that got Joe Oliva fired? Because look, he stepped down, rather. I mean, we had the Les Miles situation where he totally bundled that, had Jimbo Fisher use him to get a couple of pay raises and a different job. And then it was the second time around, Tom Herman made him look bad. So the football coaching search was an embarrassment and how that was handled. Why was this the breaking point for the big money donors and the powerful people there with LSU?
Well, I think people were angry about the Lay situation. They thought that he should have been coaching this past month. That basically they sat him down because he didn't want to go to talk with LSU, and obviously he did that on the advice of his attorney at the time. But I guess we look around other coaches who've been in trouble, supposed to be in trouble, like Bruce Pearl, and he refused to talk to his president, and he just took a team to the Final Four. That wasn't a good look as far as, I guess, the fans were angry. The donors were angry. The donors have been unhappy with a while with Joe. And when the major donors are unhappy and the money really kind of stops coming in, or there's a threat to, like, you know, you got to do something or we're not going to give as much, we're not give it all, sooner or later somebody listens. And so I guess somebody finally listened. They finally realized that that was a problem. It wasn't going to go away. It was probably going to get worse. And the basic fan base didn't like Joe Oliva. As I wrote in my column this morning or last night, that I don't think Joe ever cared about the average fan or the fan experience in Tiger Stadium at all. And this made it harder and harder for people to go to games by raising ticket prices, charging more for parking, having less free parking, turning tailgate spaces into paid tailgate spaces. Just a lot of things, the bad traffic till after games, that the average concessions, all these things added up. And when you see empty seats in the stands, even some SEC games, you're wondering what's going on. And I realize because fans finally really have a choice, because every game's on TV because of the SEC network. And if you're not doing your fans any favors with the ticket prices or all the other stuff, honestly, the Vince is going like, I don't want to fight all that. I'll stay home because, the guy running that electric department really didn't care about me. So why should I care about him?
Hey, you make some valid points there, Ron, because there did seem to be a disconnect with Joe and not only the fan base but also boosters. And, there was, you're right, the game day experiences and everything like that. And he also just didn't seem – at times he seemed very aloof and didn't really – wasn't all that friendly with us in the media either. He doesn't have to be that. I'm not saying that should be a requirement to be the athletic director, but if you're the top dog, so to speak, of a million-dollar company, and that's what LSU Athletics is, you probably need to be a little bit more savvy when it comes to dealing with the media and promoting your said brand, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, Joe was a recluse. The only time he ever talked to the media was when he found a media outlet that he felt would not ask him a tough question, and he could basically have a platform. And the rare times you got a chance to ask Joe a question, He was so arrogant, he acted like he were wasting his time. Joe always thought he was the smartest guy in the room, always, and basically didn't think he was accountable to anybody but King Alexander. And just a guy who just insulated himself. But the only time he ever communicated with the media or the outside world were through the group emails or his letters to the fans. Found him, as I wrote, he's probably in 5 decades of writing sports, he's the worst athletic director I've ever dealt with, easily, and the most disliked by a fan base that I've ever seen.
Ron, let's talk about the guy that is replacing him. A lot of buzz about him. And look, and here's something that he's done in a short time at Texas A&M. This is a guy that's not afraid of making a big hire or firing someone. He takes over there as AD. He got rid of Kevin Sumlin. Despite the early success in his career, things have kind of gotten stale there. He fires him, and he goes out and gets Jimbo when LSU and Joe Oliva couldn't. And not only that, he just had another sensational hire less than a month ago when he gets Buzz Williams, one of the best coaches in college basketball, to come to Texas A&M. This is a guy that appears to know how to close the deal to get the big-name coaches to come to a place like A&M. LSU's got to be thrilled about having a guy like this that could bring in the right coaches for all sports.
Right, and also when Scott was at Washington, he hired the Boise State coach, Peterson. I mean, away from Boise State, and Peterson repeatedly said he wasn't leaving Boise State ever, and he got him to Washington, and that's been a great deal for Washington. They've had a great football program since that hire was made. So, immediately people are saying, well, what do you think he's going to do with the football situation? Listen, Scott Woodward, he has said he likes Ed Orgeron. He thinks he's a good coach. And I know Scott wants him to succeed. But also know this, and I know this about Ed and Scott. They know that you're based, that the success of a coach is based on wins and losses. I mean, the graduation rate's fine, and all the other stuff is okay, but it comes down to wins and losses. And I think, and Ed has always known that, and so I think the relationship will be fine. I think Scott loves LSU like Ed loves LSU, and I think Scott wants Ed to succeed. But that said, if Ed is not getting the job done, I don't think Scott will have any. He won't like it, but he'll fire him. Just like he didn't really, it pained him to fire Billy Kinley, his basketball coach at A&M. Billy had some health issues the last couple of years, and it was trying to fight through him, and he didn't like firing Billy Kinley, but I mean, yeah, he understood when it's time to make a change, then program's not getting any better, and it's getting worse, you make a change. And I think he will do that with Ed if that has to happen. But I don't think he wants it to happen.
Right.
I don't think he wants it to happen at all, because I think, Scott, like Ed, loves LSU. They both want to see LSU do well. And I think Ed understands that, too. Ed's pretty realistic about all this stuff. That's why I really like Ed Orgeron a lot, because he makes coaching a lot more uncomplicated than it's supposed to be. And he makes it simple. And he also understands the simplicity of this business. The bottom line is winning. If you don't win enough, you get fired. Ed knows that.
Ron, let's switch over from the changes in leadership there in the athletic department. Let's go to the baseball team. It's been not a great stretch here. The loss at Southern for only the third time in that series history last week. Then they dropped 2 of 3 at Mizzou. And then they lose to UL on Tuesday there in the Wally Ponoff Jr. Classic. I know there's been a slew of injuries, all the arm soreness with the pitching staff that's piled up on this team. What do you expect to see from LSU for this weekend series at home there at the Box versus Florida?
Well, I expect them. I always pick LSU to bounce back when they don't play very well. I mean, they may have all those, a lot of those injured guys. I mean, Reed may play this weekend. Everybody's been hurt recently. May play this weekend, which would be a help. Florida isn't as good as it's been in the past. I mean, 2 years ago they beat LSU for the national championship, and this year I believe they're like at 500 or below 500. I think they're below 500 in league play. They haven't played well. This is a chance for LSU to get back on track. LSU's got to hit the ball better. I mean, the pitching hasn't been terrible. I mean, it's not as great as it's been in the past. But they just don't. LSU gets these stretches, but they don't hit the ball. They got to come out. They got to come out swinging and be aggressive and go after it. You know, that said, even through this little bad patch of games we lost last four or five, they're still 9-6 in the SEC, and they're a game out of first place. They're 9-6, and Georgia and Florida are 10-5, and LSU's already won the series over State, or Mississippi State and Georgia are 10-5, and LSU's already beaten Mississippi State in the series. So, I understand there's a lot of concern. LSU's like 4-4 this year and against in-state teams in Tuesday games. LSU fans don't like that. But what LSU fans sometimes, I think, understand is that there are really good baseball teams throughout this state, all over the place. I mean, UL has been a really good program for a while. And I think there should be a better respect level from LSU fans about UL's program, because it's a really good program. I think LSU fans should respect other programs, like LSU loses to Northwestern or McNeese or Southeastern, back like they look down their nose and say, we should never lose to them. Well, why not? They have good players, too. In baseball, with the roster limits and scholarship limitations, I mean, you put the right guys on the field, yeah, on a certain night, you can beat LSU. And should LSU come to play harder? Maybe so. But that's an insult to all those other teams in this state who play really good baseball. You know, LSU losing to UL shouldn't be a big thing, because UL's a really good team. And, I mean, just a few years ago in the NCAA tournament, LSU and UL had to battle each other in the tournament. So I just think LSU fans need to calm down and let the thing play out. And you hear all this stuff every other week after they lose a series, fire Mineri. Well, you know, if you go fire Mineri, tell me who else you're going to hire. Who are you going to get? You got somebody lined up better than him?
Smoke? No, not Smoke. No, not Smoke.
every year they go through a patch like this, and they usually pull out of it. I mean, would Paul prefer not to happen? No. But they've had a lot of injuries with pitching. You know, they're trying to get two guys back from last year, who being Walker, who didn't pitch, and Hayard, who had arm problems in the year. They're trying to get those guys right. And week by week, you can kind of see it coming back in spots, especially for Hayard. I just think it's a damn hard league, and that's what LSU really has to worry about. In the midweek games, if you lose them, you lose them. But don't be insulted. Don't act like look down your nose because you lost an in-state team, because there's really good baseball throughout the state, not just in Baton Rouge.
Ron, brother, I appreciate you coming on, being the voice of reason, as always, giving us the straight talk. See you out there at the Box sometime this coming weekend, brother. And if not, have a happy Easter for you and your family.
All right. Take care, man. See ya.
Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. just a reminder, guys, make sure to tune in this afternoon and check out the good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. He'll be broadcasting live from the Tap Room River Ranch from 4 to 5:30. He's going to help lead you right into the pregame show for LSU at Florida baseball. Also, Good Friday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports tomorrow will be live from Ruffino's on the river. That's right. They'll have their Lenten appetizer specials in the bar, and special guests will be joining Ben Love live for another edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports right there on Ruffino's on the river. Also, quickly, just a reminder, because of the threat of severe weather today, all state offices are closed. All the Catholic schools in the Diocese of Lafayette will be closed as well, with the two exceptions, Turlings and St. Bernard School. Both of those will be dismissing around 10:30 a.m. because they are presenting their passion plays for Easter weekend right now, this morning, as we're talking. All Evangeline Parish schools, public schools, are closed as well. And all five locations of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Acadiana will be closed due to severe weather threat in the area. Our friends over at KLFY tell us that the highest level of tornado threat activity is going to be coming from the hours of 11 to 3 o'clock. So 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., that's what KLFY says is going to be the highest level of possible tornado threats. So make sure you're safe out there. Make sure you're not on the road if you don't need to be. And if you do get caught out there, make sure you find some shelter. Okay? So be safe out there. Enjoy your day. Love it. Live it. But just be safe while you're doing it. I want to thank all of our guests today for coming on. It was a jam-packed show. John Marquez, James Yasko, Les East, Ron Higgins, and, of course, the legend himself, Danny Broussard, for coming in live in studio. That was a great treat on our part. Tomorrow, we'll end the week strong. We got Barry Hurst is coming in. We have Tyler Nunez. And then we got the one and only, the draft expert himself, Mike Dettelier, is going to be joining us as well. Y'all have a safe day out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Sport of Politics is next, right here on 103.7 The Game.